Hello again and welcome to Club C. I'm Jo, and with me today is Jennifer Madsen.
Hi, Jo.
Hi, Jen. Jennifer's here because she had, I don't know how to describe it. It wasn't my situation, but she had an experience and that she wants to share about concerning her father's death. Your dad had what kind of cancer?
Mouth cancer.
How long did he live once he was diagnosed?
Almost a year to the day.
Did he tell you right away that he was diagnosed with cancer?
Well, the interesting thing, I don't know for sure, and my stepmother's not really saying for sure, but my husband and I went to see them. Just a regular trip. Just we're going to Naples to see them in May of 2008. He looked great, and we all were sitting around and doing our thing, had a beautiful trip. And it was probably 2 weeks later that they told us that he was going to be going through radiation, that they'd found a spot in his mouth that they wanted to do radiation for. I guess it was later that I figured out that he probably knew when we were there and didn't want to wreck the trip.
How many siblings do you have?
I have four from the family of origin, if you will, and then one stepbrother and a half-brother.
All right. And when they told you, did they tell everybody at the same time? Just called everybody up?
I think they did. I think they kind of caught us one by one and probably started with my older brother and me and my younger brother and then went around the horn to let everybody know.
Wasn't there something going on with your dad and stepmom that led you to believe that maybe they weren't fully forthcoming with all of the treatment and everything that was happening?
I think they did their best to downplay the seriousness of it, because mouth cancer is evidently one of those that's a really difficult strain of cancer. It's very difficult to treat and certainly to cure. The environment, you know, where it manifests is inside, right? The very moist area of your, you know, body, right? So it's hard for anything to dry out and heal and kind of come back. But, you know, they were hopeful. They were hopeful from day one. I think it was a combination of being hopeful and also not wanting to overly worry the rest of us, because none of us live where they lived. So I think they didn't want us all hopping on airplanes and maybe even getting in the way of what they needed to do.
Right. So he had radiation, mm-hmm. And then what other treatment did he receive?
Well, the radiation went on for quite a few weeks, and as was my father's MO, he was pretty practical and humorous at the same time about that. We would ask him how that was going, and he'd say, you know, it's at its worst, it's boring. And because it's not really all that painful, except that it does, you know, kind of burn the skin, and that was uncomfortable. But he would envision himself playing a hole of golf at the range where he used to, or the club where he used to be a ranger. And so he got himself through that. And
what do you mean? While he was going through the radiation treatments, he would play golf
in his head? Yeah, he'd play golf in his head. And so he could pass the time, because he said it was just a really, really, really boring way to pass time. Mm-hmm. And so again, I don't know if that was to make us feel better or if that's truly what he was going through. And through the radiation, though, the burn on the inside from the radiation required him to have a feeding tube about 2 months into that treatment. So they had that on top of the cancer treatment. But after he finished the radiation, they thought they'd gotten what they needed to from his mouth and throat. And then it was a couple months later that the cancer recurred. And the next option was for them to go and do surgery and cut out the area inside and then do, I think, what's called a pectoral flap, because they took a good portion of his jaw and move the pectoral muscle up to kind of recreate that jaw and that side of the face.
Is this like what Roger Ebert has?
I think that Roger Ebert had the opportunity to actually have a molded piece that was put in as a jaw.
Oh.
And by the time Dad had the surgery, there wasn't enough for it to attach to.
I see.
Because of what had been taken out with the surgery. Again, they were pretty hopeful at that point that they'd gotten it. And I got a chance to go see him just before the surgery. And then my older brother, because he went up to a cancer center in Tampa, my older brother got a chance to kind of go through that with them because they stayed with him while he was up there for about a week. And then they went back to Naples and started to try and recover from that. It was about 6 months later that he was told that, well, it's not like it went away and came back. I don't think it ever went away, frankly.
I see.
Because it kind of started manifesting pretty aggressively at that point. And that's when they told him that his last option would be chemotherapy. But it was only really to give him an extra 3 to 6 months, at which point, and the pain by that time had gotten pretty horrific, he decided to decline for the treatment.
How was your stepmother through all this? Was she supportive? And, oh, Jen, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Our last guest cried. It's okay to cry. Jared cried. I made him cry. I don't mean to laugh at you. I'm not laughing at you. I'm just, it's so emotional. And I know you love your dad very much.
Yeah, we had an amazing relationship through all the good and bad of my life and his as well. I think that, you know, it's been a while since I've told the story, so I wasn't expecting that, but I expected that it would come up anyway.
Was your stepmother supportive of everything your dad wanted to do with his treatments?
Yes.
She never tried to talk him into chemotherapy or...
No, by that time he was in so much pain. And she was not only teaching full-time still, but going back and forth for all the surgery and administering all the feedings through the feeding tube because he was never able to come off the feeding tube. And all the medications and all the pain medication. And his pain cycles were getting shorter and shorter. I had already planned a trip to Florida to go to my 30-year high school reunion. And what's interesting about the timing of all of that is that my dad was a high school teacher, my AP English teacher in that high school. And so many, 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 many years of students that knew him and had had him as a teacher. He was a spectacular teacher. So I was going down there anyway when they called to say that he was going to decline further treatment and that we should all kind of gather at that point. And I think that, you know, people get in some denial about somebody's condition. I certainly was. You know, that was a pretty telling phone call. That right. was, get on an airplane as soon as you can. I know you were planning to come next Wednesday anyway, but you might want to come sooner. So,
did they call in hospice by this time?
They had not yet. They talked to me on a Saturday morning. I got on the phone with the airline I was going to be flying out with that next Wednesday anyway, and got on a red eye that night. One of the few little miracles, you know, that you got to experience in that week, things kind of just started coming together that allowed us to get there.
Everyone was able to be there?
Yeah, one at a time we got there. You know, I got on a flight that night and got there Sunday morning. So it was my stepmother and I that were together with him on Sunday. And, you know, at the time I got there on Sunday, he was still sitting upright and at the couch and using a wheeled walker to get to the bathroom and back, but still in a tremendous amount of pain. And, but able to give me a hard time still, told me don't put any lettuce down his disposal because I messed up his system the last time and don't forget that. And,
you know, you're talking about his sink system.
His sink disposal, right. Yeah. Don't make any salads, he said, and just giving me a hard time. He knew I was, that the reunion was happening that week too, and he wanted to be sure that I went. That I was able to go see my friends. And
what about all your siblings? They all came in?
So, you know, kind of a couple at a time, one at a time. I called my brothers and said, you guys need to come. I know you're planning to come later, but come now. And so they did. They got there by Monday. My half-brother already lived in Naples, so he'd been involved this whole time with Dad's situation and treatments and such. My stepbrother had been deployed to Afghanistan. He's in a special forces unit of the military. So one of those units that never gets to really tell anybody where he is. But Janet, my stepmother, and I she and Christopher's wife started calling the Red Cross and the military to let them know what was going on with Dad. And within 5 days, they got him home.
That is so beautiful.
It was extraordinary. And I don't know the name of the organization that facilitated that, but there is a benevolence association specifically for special forces, soldiers and families to help them in circumstances like this. So they got him on a plane from wherever he was in Afghanistan, home to Virginia, where he picked up the wife and the two kids and got down to Florida and in Dad's living room, literally inside of 4 or 5 days.
That's amazing.
Paid for his airfare, paid for his hotel for 2 weeks. I mean, really, really took care of them in that way to get them down there, which was awesome. It's great.
How was hospice?
Hospice was wonderful. Hospice was really great. I think that it was difficult at first for Janet to, not to let go of being in charge of his treatment, but a little bit, because she'd been so involved with that. I mean, she had been the only caretaker of all that. And when I got there on Sunday, she and I started the conversation about hospice. And so we called them on Monday and called a couple of places, actually, down there.
You interviewed?
Yeah.
A couple of hospice places.
I did.
Was it a situation where they swooped in and took over?
Kind of. They kind of did. It was... But they were real gentle about it. They were very...
It wasn't offensive to her.
Not at all. They were very respectful of the role that she had played and very mindful that they also needed to move in and make some things happen. So 24, 48 hours later, by this time my dad's brother had made it down from Michigan with his best friend also to visit. And so they were very helpful in moving the furniture and bringing in the hospital bed and setting things up with hospice and getting Dad situated in that way, which had happened, I think, by about Wednesday of that week. He was not ambulatory anymore.
And this was something your father had wanted, was to die in his own home,
yes,
surrounded by his family and his wife. And
absolutely. And he was still lucid enough that he was writing letters to each one of us. Now, as the week wore on, they got less and less readable, if you will. But even by the time Christopher got there that Friday, I think we were all fortunate to get the communication, whether it was long or short.
He wrote you a personal letter just to you?
Yes, each one of us.
Oh, my God.
Each one of us. And actually,
what a gift.
He wrote notes. Because, of course, with mouth cancer, he wasn't talking much. So he was trying. He was still trying to talk, but he wasn't talking much. And this was a man who loved nothing more than to talk and eat.
Not fair.
Yeah, really wasn't very fair. But so he would write these notes. Some of them we'd read because the morphine was kicking in at that point.
Oh.
And he'd write these notes. And we'd think, wow, I wonder if he really wanted us to know that.
Oh.
He'd get a little...
big revelations at the end.
Yeah, he'd get a little telling about people that would show up to see him, and he'd write notes about them after they left, and it was really kind of interesting. But yeah, he wrote notes to every single one of us.
How many times did you say you pulled out that note he wrote to you since he's
dozens
been gone?
Of times since then, because his writing, of course, is his style of penmanship, I should say. First of all, is very unique. And, you know, when I was growing up, of course, he was an English teacher. So I'd see his writing all the time, and he would correct my papers when I got into his class finally. And I also dug up an old letter that he had typed to me when I was away on a trip during the summer. And so I have those two letters, really, from... If I have more, I don't know where they are, but I have those two.
That's really sweet.
Yeah, it was great.
And did he plan his service in any way, his memorial?
He did, and he planned it. I think he had planned some of it before all of this, but most of it really was in conversation with us that week. He was not a church-going guy, so there was not to be any of that as far as having any kind of church service.
None of that.
There was none of that. He just said, you know, gather when you can and where you will and when you will, and play the music that I loved. And, have
and
a
what
good
kind
time.
Of music was that?
Oh, Jerry Jeff Walker, Merle Haggard.
True country.
Tom Waits, Alison Krauss.
Wow.
You know, he liked some of the older pop stuff that we had when we were growing up. I sang an Alison Krauss song at his funeral and... Or his memorial, actually.
Which one was that?
Down to the River to Pray.
Oh.
Yeah.
I know that song from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a great
loved
song.
Alison Krauss. Loved her voice. So, yeah, he grew up in Kentucky. And he was a coal miner's kid. So he loved that old country, old bluegrass music.
And which had some religious overtones.
Quite a lot, right? I mean, the Alison Krauss song is very spiritual, very religious in its respect. So, yeah, he just said, get together and do that. And in the meantime, he also, you know, Dad hadn't made a lot of money in his lifetime or accumulated a lot of stuff, but he made sure he also wrote out by hand what he wanted to have go to the kids, to each of us, and had an attorney come in that week to witness that. And that was his will, and that was what, you know, got taken care of that week as well.
Were you with him when he died?
No, I was there until that next Sunday, and he died 2 weeks later, two Sundays later.
Can we talk about your sister?
Yes. Can I talk about her without crying? Don't know, but I'll try.
Jennifer's told me a precious story about her sister after your dad died, or at the time he was dying.
You know, one of the other miracles that we were able to kind of pull off during that week and getting everybody together, one of the things that we were able to do was go up north to Gainesville and get my sister Katie. Katie's mentally handicapped, but she's, to be more specific, probably got the mind and sensibility of a 10-year-old in a 52-year-old, gosh, 54-year-old life experience now. So she knows some stuff. I mean, at the same time, she has her own way of figuring it out and characterizing it.
So, and she lives on her own?
She does. She lives independently. And she lives not too far from my mom up there. But she lives by herself, and she has social workers that come to see her. And so anyway, my older brother went up and got her and then brought her back. And this was after Dad had been, there for a week. It was the day that I left that they were able to go get her. And so I got to see her before I left, and she went in to see Dad. And by that time, he was pretty far under the morphine and stuff. I'm not sure. He was still squeezing people's hands and stuff, but I don't know if that was reaction to us or to having a hand in his hand. I don't know.
Yeah.
Probably knew that we were there. But Katie went in to see him. She came back out later and said, that's not my dad. It's not my dad. 2-3 months later, one of her social workers who takes her out in the community and such took her out on a Saturday, and they'd go to garage sales and stuff. And in this particular garage sale, Katie decided to bring all the cards that my dad had ever given her and give them away.
She did.
She just gave them away. Yeah.
And what did she say about that?
She said, my dad's not here and I don't need these anymore.
Oh. Was that her way, you think, of getting some kind of closure with this? Or?
I'm sure it was.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was. And in my world, I was like, well, you can't give all that stuff away. And, you know, you got to keep it. But I don't know that she really does.
Through this whole experience with your father getting cancer and calling in hospice and helping put together his own memorial, it all being so upfront and everyone communicating about his death, what do you take from that that you wish other people could know and maybe think would help other families who go through similar experiences?
I think we take some things for granted. Like, we had a year to prepare for the idea that he was going to be gone. And you don't always get that. You know, people oftentimes die very suddenly. It made it very clear that we were very lucky to have had some time with him, make sure all was right with between us in terms of our relationships together. So one of the things I think it's made me even more mindful of is to be sure I don't take the relationships in my life for granted. You know, they don't hold grudges or any kind of stuff like that. And I've had that conversation with my brothers too. The other thing is just letting people know what you really want, but making sure it's written down and it's someplace where it's very clear and nobody has to guess, because there's too much other stuff going on during that time for people to have to guess what you want. I'm in the process, really in the middle of trying to make sure that I'm completely organized on that respect too, because I never was, as much as I know that I need to be.
And how's your stepmother doing now?
She's better. She's better. It's been really, really tough, as you can imagine. But Dad died in 2009. Fall of last year, we got a chance to go down to Naples and visit. And at that time, she was talking about taking a cruise to Egypt with some folks from school.
Wow.
Yeah, she had her knees, both knees replaced earlier that summer. So, you know, she just was a little cautious about getting going in a trip that big, but was really looking for our blessing, I think.
Yeah.
To go. And we were like, go, 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 go.
Yeah.
Go. And she had a great time.
She'll always miss him. And I'm sure you all will too.
Sure. You don't think about it. You don't think about life really without that person, I just always assumed that my dad was going to be around for the rest of my life.
Yeah, it's really a surprise to learn that people do pass away.
Yeah. Kind of the circle of life, you know, but not for me, not for us.
Maybe everyone else,
yeah,
but
that's right,
the circle doesn't close up over here.
Yeah.
Well, and you'd probably never dream that you'd be talking about it on a podcast.
Hmm. No, but I, you know, of course, I it's easy to say yes to you when it's something about what might be helpful for somebody else. And
And
I think that the miracle of being able to get there, all of us got there. All of us had time with him while he was still lucid enough to know that we were there. That's really, really fortunate. People don't get that.
Thanks for sharing today, Jennifer. What's your dad's name?
Don.
Don, thanks for sharing about your dad, Don, today.
Thanks for having me.
As I went down in the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the starry crown, good Lord, show me the way. Oh, sisters, let's go down, let's go down.